Hello, everyone. I want to welcome you to this first edition of Living Healthy, Living Smart with Chris Gibson. I'm very excited for two reasons. One, obviously, this is the first show that I've done, and I packed a wallop of a show for you on the first one. The second reason is part of the first. My guest is Mark Neidig, who has quite a story to tell, and we're going to be talking today about cancer research. Cutting-edge cancer research, which is important to all of us because we all know someone in our lives that has had that disease. Just this morning, one of my business partners' wife found out that her father has been diagnosed with prostate cancer. And it seems like every day someone within my circle has that problem, has a cancer situation or experience going on, whether they've survived it. I have a friend who had Mohs surgery to have skin cancer removed off his nose. This was last year. So it's everywhere. It's prevalent in our society and indeed in the world at large. So cutting edge technology is, you know, the way to go, right? Because what we've been seeing over the last, 10, 15 years is kind of a stagnation of methods or treatments. In general, it's still kind of the cut and burn methodology that we have out there in the medical world. So I'm really excited to have Mark on with us today because he was the head of a foundation that we're going to talk about that brought new technology to the forefront. And without further ado, let me just introduce you, Mark. And welcome you to my show.
Good day, Chris. Thank you so much for having
me. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Kansas Foundation, which is what we're going to talk a little bit about, and then talk about you and what you've got going on and what you see as the future of cancer research, because this is such an important topic to everyone. As I just said, just today I had a phone call with that kind of news.
Sure. I'll tell you, it is truly just such a pandemic across not just the country, but the world, as every day we are faced with this dilemma of not just why we got cancer and how we got cancer, but how we're treated. And that's what the Kansas Foundation was all about. A guy named John Kansas was a radio broadcast engineer. He understood the power of radio waves. And that's really what this is all about. Early in his career, he was climbing a tower, and one of his coworkers just simply asked him, John, are your car keys in your pocket? And as he reached down, he said, well, yeah, they are. And he was admonished at that point, take them out, put them in your locker, because as you climb the tower, the radio waves get more intense, and it will heat up the keys and burn your leg. Well, we know now that John was a very smart man because he took that very concept to heart. And he was very successful, owned radio and television businesses, and he sold those, retired, and as so many people, you know, desire the life of living on a golf course with their boat and enjoying time with the grandkids, came down with cancer. And as those words, you have cancer, you know, plagued his thought process, he began the intense treatments both at his local hospital and at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. He would sit in the waiting room watching these little kids, and that's just the thing that ate his heart out, as he would see these kids come in with such energy and vivation and walk away so sick. And he saw their hair fall out. He saw their color change and their eyes begin to sink in. And he thought, there's got to be a better way to do this. And every night he'd lay in bed thinking that very thing. There's got to be a better way. And then he thought about the admonition of his coworker. His wife tells a story that she would find him out in the kitchen night after night after night, tinkering with her pie pans. And she would ask him, John, what are you doing? He's like, I'm going to cure cancer, honey. And she's like, okay, he's got chemo brain. And off she'd go back to bed. And John would keep on working in the kitchen. Well, what he did was he took these pie pans, cut them in such a way that he made them antennas and connected them to a couple ham radios, which he was an avid fan of. And he created a very crude form of a radio wave generator and receptor. Then he pulls a hot dog out of his refrigerator and ties a string to it, dangles it between the two pie pans, and turns them on the radios. And the radio wave goes through the hot dog, and nothing happens. But then, just as he remembered and recalled back from his day climbing the tower, he put a metal probe into the hot dog and again dangled it between the pie pans. And as the radio waves passed over it, it started to cook the hot dog, but only where that metal probe was. And as he thought, if I can get metal small enough, direct it specifically to a cancer cell and only a cancer cell, and then pass a controlled radio wave over it, I could heat up the metal, destroy the cancer cell, but not do any collateral damage to the neighboring healthy cells. Hence a side effect free cancer treatment.
Wow, that's crazy.
Well, as John introduced that to his friends and really even the media, you know, people thought he was crazy. You know, it's almost like everybody wants a better way to treat cancer, but they don't believe it when a good one comes along.
It doesn't sound heinous enough. You know, we're so used to that.
Like you think, you know, if it's too good to be true, then it's probably too good to be true.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But John didn't give up. He was very tenacious. And he put up a fight. And really for the next couple of years, he not only went through his treatments and got incredibly sicker, but he really pushed this concept, and he introduced it to elected officials and to the media. And, you know, having had television stations, he had connections, and he would get people to listen to him. But unfortunately, he succumbed to his cancer, and it took the best of him. It took his life in early 2009. And so I was living in D.C. at the time, was recruited by a firm from Erie, Pennsylvania, where the foundation was based, to come and lead the initiative. Now, at that point, there was a group of friends of John Kansas's that had set up the foundation, desiring to keep the work going for John. But when John passed, it was like, whoa, you know, we've all got full-time jobs.
Right.
This is a big undertaking. If we're going to change the world, we need help.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm humbled to have been, you know, selected from the cast of candidates to have gone and led this initiative. But boy, has it been an exciting ride.
Yeah, it's funny. I want to kind of step in here and talk about, that's how I met you, was because we both were in Erie, Pennsylvania, which is this little town between Cleveland and Buffalo and Pittsburgh, kind of in the triangle up there on the lake. And I was there for the work that I was doing. You came there for the work that you were doing. And that's how I was introduced to this. This is a great happening, you know, just to even know you and know the story, which I can't wait for you to tell the rest of it, because there's some crazy stuff you're going to get to talk about. But it was interesting to me that what I learned about Erie, that little town, is that strangely the cancer rates are off the charts when you look at for the amount of population that is there. And so the thought process being that, you know, over the years, with all of the smelting and metalworking that went on in those three cities, that Erie got a lot of the fallout, as did another little town not too far away, Youngstown, Ohio. It's high cancer rates there on the Ohio side. And so it's interesting to me that this would be the place, the birthplace of this new technology. It's really crazy, because prior to that, as most people probably would guess, Pennsylvania, Canada, right next door, Erie was known for ice. That's what it was known for. You know, that's they shipped ice all over the country back when that's how refrigeration was done. So I just think that's fascinating. And then why don't you tell us a little bit about what put Erie on the map, put Kansas on the map, and you in front of the cameras on the Today Show, because that to me was when I saw a turning point in all this. Because I like to talk about the fact that there is, with these organizations out here raising money, they are so big, they're behemoth, and they the intent is right, the intent is pure, but they get slowed down just because of their size. And we've seen that a lot with a lot of the charitable foundations. They do good work, not taking anything away from that, but it's hard to get a new voice through all of that. It's hard to get past what people are used to hearing and used to seeing and get placed the way that you did. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the Pepsi Refresh Challenge that you won, actually?
Oh, I tell you, when I hear the word Pepsi Refresh, you know, it gives me chills. It almost gives me nausea at the same time. It was one of those things that, you know, we were a small shop. I mean, I was the first full-time employee that they had ever had. And needless to say, the first executive director. And my charge was to gather the awareness that was necessary to raise the funds just to fund research, and then the job was done. And, you know, how does one guy do that? Well, you have to empower, embrace the large community.
Right.
And I was sitting literally one Monday morning, and I believe it was February 1st of 2010, and it was the first day of the Pepsi Refresh Project. And this challenge that Pepsi set up in lieu of advertising on the Super Bowl in 2010, they decided to give philanthropic dollars to refreshing projects across the country by way of these organizations getting votes. And I'm listening to this, and they're like, we're going to give $250,000 gifts every month during the year of 2010. And I'm like, whoa, I could use $250,000. And you had to fill out a grant request and submit it online. So literally I turn off the TV, rush to my office, begin the process, send it in, and we were selected for the month of April. And that's when all panic broke, because it's like, okay, now how are we going to do it?
Right.
You know, really social media had just started. We had set up our Facebook account, I think, in February of that year. And, you know, we had, oh, wow, a couple hundred fans. And it's like, this is really going to be helpful. And right. It's like, where do you go? How do you do this? And one key thing was to really create a compelling case. And that was the title of our program, was to develop a treatment for cancer that doesn't have side effects. Well, you don't have to know anything about Kansas. You don't have to know about anything about the project itself. But when you see that title, anybody who's had cancer touch their life, they knew that had some validity of at least a right. refreshment. Because we've all seen what the ill effects of traditional chemotherapy and radiation treatments right. do to an individual. It's barbaric. It and is. A patient shouldn't have to go, nor their family, through all of those side effects that debilitate a person's lifestyle and ability to continue life as it should be. We have to provide a better way. And so we launched this initiative April 1st. And I really will never, ever forget, as we started, there were 287 different projects that were vying for $250,000. And, you know, I'm looking at this list going, oh, great. We've got an organization from Los Angeles. We have one from Chicago. We have one from Atlanta, one from New York City. And I'm like, this is Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
and it's like,
crazy?
how do you get the masses to vote? And that's where we'll take it back to the Erie, Pennsylvania part of the story, because mm-hmm. I'll tell you, they were the catalyst. They embraced this initiative partially because it was a hometown, homebred initiative, but also because cancer had affected all of their lives so much and their loved ones that were across the globe. And so we started initiatives that people would vote, send an email out to invite their friends to vote, and that ripple effect across the country brought us to a point that we got first place in the country and received that $250,000 gift.
Yeah, that's crazy. And that's one of the things I really admire about that little city, is that I've lived a lot of places and I've been all over everywhere else. And I have never seen a town, city, if you will, that has that much charitable backbone. I mean, that place is crazy. They've got there's so many organizations there to help. Just not just locally, but nationally and globally, they're located there, and that they have an entire committee. They have like an organization that helps, you know, steward all of those
yes.
together.
Yes.
So it's crazy. I mean, you just don't see that anywhere else. You know, it's a pretty amazing place. And that's, I mean, it got me involved. I can remember all the functions and events that I saw you at talking about it, and I think that's how I met you, actually.
I believe so.
One of those.
Yes.
And we started talking because I'm a holistic health expert, and this was really interesting to me that you could treat cancer without killing the person in the process.
Exactly.
So,
and so, you know, as we built this platform of really captivating the guerrilla marketing style and methodology, we embraced and really just encouraged people to help us spread the wave, as we called it. And so
right.
to spread the word, we spread the wave with the radio waves. And
right. it was great.
People would help us not only just share the message, but raise funds for us. And even to the day that we closed our doors, we had revenues in excess of $17 million that we had two full-time people and two part-time people. So it was a very lean operation that was incredibly effective.
Awesome. That's just, I mean, I got to watch all of this, but it's hearing all the background that went on behind it is just amazing. And then just recently, you made a trip to Washington, D.C. for a very special event. Why don't you tell us about that and what happened there?
Man, Chris, just saying that, I mean, I got the goosebumps. It's, we got a phone call from Congressman Mike Kelly from our district, and his office was desirous of doing a commendation on the House floor for the Kansas Foundation and John Kansas. And I'll never forget going into the chamber and sitting down literally in the row behind where Mrs. Obama sits for the State of the Union address. And as we're looking down on the House floor, and I see our congressman look up at us, and he even publicly acknowledged me by name, and my board president, Marianne Yoakum, and one of my D.C. board members, Deborah Thornton. And as he said that, I just thought, I'm watching history right in front of my eyes.
You are. Mm-hmm.
And it was just definitely. Such an honor, and it was so humbling to think that in a small way, we were able to be a part of making history, but ultimately changing the way cancer is treated and lives can be saved.
Yeah, it's great. Again, you know, to be able to, there's just no words really to describe the amount of effort that it takes to get in front of that cancer name, you know, and have that kind of visibility. So, I mean, it's very exciting. And all of this led up to something that is rare, actually. I mean, as people hear about FDA approvals to do therapy trials and things on humans, but it's a very difficult process. It's a difficult process to get a product approved to the FDA, and I know. So, but you guys did it. I mean, you were able to do that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the culmination of all of this and how that led to this, and then and what's next for Kansas?
Well, that is definitely the best part of the story, because, you know, our ultimate goal was to gather enough people to raise enough money to fund just enough research to prove the efficacy of the treatment concept. You know, in theory, right. we knew that metal heated up, but we had to know, how do you get the metal to the cancer cell, and how do you get the metal small enough, and how do you get the radio wave in a concise and controlled mechanism? All of those elements were achieved, and we've been able to kill just pancreatic and just liver cancer cells in their environment without any collateral damage. And we all know that pancreatic cancer has a survival rate of less than 5% after 5 years. So it's an incredibly deadly diagnosis when someone mm-hmm. gets it. And there's just no treatment out there that's even remotely close. And so when we were able to accomplish that first in the Petri dish and then in mice and rats and rabbits and now pigs, we funded all the research that was necessary. And so as our board of directors analyzed, you know, really what was our mission? Our mission was to prove the technology and close the door. And I got to tell you, you know, I knew that going in there. When I accepted the position in D.C. and I sold my condo and I moved to Erie, I knew that it was mm-hmm. a short term. But, you know, to think to be a part of right. something so mammoth as this would be, and yet – the day that we announced that we were closing the doors, because we accomplished our mission, I'm like, whoa, I worked myself out of a job. What am I going to do now? And, you know, I mean, I know everything's going to work out, but it's the thing that, you know, what a sense of accomplishment to know that, you know, we were a part of making this happen. And so the research now is in the hands of the people that the company that owns the intellectual properties. They developed the machine aspect of the research, where they've built the machines that generate and receive the radio waves. We funded the research using those machines at three academic institutions across the country. And when we finished that, now the for-profit company is going to take this to the FDA. They will seek approval to begin treating humans, and then they will begin the process of phase one, phase two, phase three human trials. And I think, you know, we have seen on the news, especially most recently with the Ebola and other you know, deadly diseases, that the FDA has kind of turned their head and allowed drugs to come in and be used for treatments that haven't been approved.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can only pray and hope
that's
that
crazy.
This same kind of grace will be shown on a treatment that is so promising. Now, we've had treatments in the past, and not me personally or our organization, but there have been treatments that have worked in animals and got to the human stage and it didn't work. So, you know, there's no guarantee this is going to work yet, but everything is leading to that point that we've been able to identify how to target those cells and how to deliver those nanoparticles of metal to the cells, and how to control the radio waves and literally just totally annihilate the cancer cells and not have any collateral damage. So we anticipate this fall an FDA approval and the announcement of when human trials will begin.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, it really could be a page turner in the whole fight against cancer. And it's so simple. And that's so funny, because from the holistic health standpoint, and certainly not to the degree that this has gone on, you know, my work has been about the same thing. If I don't help you, I don't put myself out of a job with a client, then I haven't done my job. Because the idea is to be well and to be able to live healthy and happy. And those are the foundations of creating a good life. And, you know, for years, I talked about probiotics. This is like 10 years ago when I was fighting on television with doctors. Well, not fighting, but debating on Fox News. About the fact that probiotics were, I mean, the antibiotics were just off the charts, and MRSA was becoming more and more prevalent in our hospitals. And, you know, here it comes out the news. Well, you know, it's antibiotic resistant. We hear that about a lot of things now, and the overuse of that, and that we weren't replacing the bacteria that's good for you, that needs to be inside your gut, to, for lack of a better word, to create the, you know, the balance and the healthy immune system that you need to have to survive. So, and we've watched that as the Western way has kind of moved across the globe. So now what do you see everywhere? Probiotics. There's yogurts. There's, you name it. There are companies that have sprung up that produce probiotics. You take a little tablet, and, you know, my mom had diverticulitis. She was not a fan of yogurt. But MRSA was rampant when she was going through that, and they put her on all these probiotics, and she had one of the best results. So that actually changed her disease. So part of that learning curve for the medical society was that in treating the diverticulitis by applying simply probiotics, by making sure that she was getting those regularly, you know, intravenously, sure, an antibiotic to keep the infections down, but at the same time, she had a recovery. She recovered like 9 weeks faster than that. So they've changed what they do with that now. So, and it's simple. That's simple. You know, you don't have to cut anything off, or you know what I mean? So this technology you're talking about, it's amazing, but it's amazing to me
it
because it's so simple.
It is incredibly simple. And, you know, I think we try to make things
the
so
science is simple.
Complex. And we think that we have to have, you know, standard ingredients and everything, and one is side effects. That, you know, people don't understand that you don't have to have debilitating, barbaric treatments to destroy this monster. The thought right. process is so often, you know, when there's a new drug introduced, and I say drug loosely, but, you know, Big Pharma has right. a way of brainwashing us to think that it's got to be a drug for it to be okay. You know, homeopathic and natural remedies, you know, have been shunned upon because it's not part of the big business.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's what I always make jokes about. Kind of a dark side of that is that every drug is you could call it natural. It comes from something on the earth. So we can go to Mars and get it. But the weirdness of it is these commercials that you see, right, that are about these drugs. And there's the beautiful music, and it's the airplane flying through the sunset, and it's all of this wonderful stuff while they're reading you these ridiculous side effects and these ridiculous potential outcomes that you could have taking a drug. And I've always said a lot of the medicines that we've had in the last 30 years would help with a disease, but they would in the end do you in. So, you know, you could only take – your kidneys could only take certain – this medicine's for so long. That's the same thing with people on painkillers. You know, over time, they're going to do you in because – and steroids, same thing, going to do you in because they don't cure. They don't yes. correct. Yes. They hold back. They hold back a disease. They slow it down. But in the end, they're poisonous too. So it's not a fun ride. And so to see this – that's what I mean by this could be a mental page-turner – in the thought process that we have about how we treat things. And we know things are yes. coming along like yes. lasers, you know, that therapies are coming along. Look at what they've done with HIV, with antivirals. But even with that, they're holding the disease back. They're not, you know, they're not curing it. So I'm hoping that this will start to begin to change that. And then, of course, you know, I'm the voice out there for, you know, outside of your genetics, doing everything you can to take your power back and understand what you need to know about what you eat and how your body works and the effects of things that you, you know, have going on. And we all have those lessons. I mean, I love Diet Coke, which is terribly bad for you. And I mean, as we go along, studies show more and more, I'm great with my diet. I'm great with all of those things. I keep an eye on my skin. I do all the things I'm supposed to do, but that's one of those things that I'm having to weed out of my repertoire because, you know, the studies, every year we get a little more information on what it does for the body. And now we know that that kind of tricks the brain into thinking you've eaten calories when you haven't. So it's interesting because all of this puts the power back. And if John Kansas had not taken his power in that disease, if he had not taken it rather than just give up on life, and so many people do that and go get in the bed and not fight, if he had not taken responsibility, we might not even have this technology. So it's amazing that that person in the worst of circumstances was able to take responsibility for themselves within the disease.
That really
and
is true.
Try
you know,
find
I think
an answer.
That taking charge and taking control of your life has even been part of the reason why we were so successful as so many people mm-hmm. were looking for an alternative to what their loved one was going through, they would find us. And then they found out that they could actually be instrumental in making it happen. I think so often when people give to a nonprofit, they give thinking that it's going to provide assistance for change. But I don't know if they really embrace the idea that they are really making that change happen, and they don't necessarily see
right yeah it
those
starts as an individual
results. And that's one thing that we really communicated, and I hope people will say effectively, we shared everything. We were so transparent about, you know, the outcomes of our mm-hmm. research and what the philanthropic donations were funding, because they were making it happen. You know, I told people, you know, thank you for volunteering, but I need your money. Volunteering doesn't right. pay for research. Money pays for research. And this is yeah. what we need to do. We right. have 23 people in Houston that need money to work in the lab. We've got 5 people in Pittsburgh. We've got 4 right. people in Davis, California. It's like, we need the money. And people would right. realize the fact that, right. yeah, you know, you're paying a salary, that's true, but a white coat is what made the research happen. And we got some tremendous yeah, results, exactly. and it is going to change the world.
I think so, too. So what, now that that is done, what, you know, what do you see? 2 things I want to cover. One is, what do you see the future of cancer treatments? I think we've kind of said what our, I think people would probably get what we think it is, but I'd like to talk about that just a little bit. And then I'd also like to give our listeners information on how they can support the work after this, because I know the foundation is not there anymore, but I know that their research is still going on and there sure. are still ways for people to contribute. So I want to make sure that we talk about that. So if we could talk about, you know, you've been on the, you've had the astronaut view of cancer research. You really have, because of where this went. So what do you see
sure, sure.
as the future? Just you well, can sum it up, because I kind of think we've talked about it.
What we have accomplished, I think, will really be the launching pad for so many other researchers and thought makers to reach outside of their box and try something that's not the norm. We've got to be far-reaching when it comes to not just cancer research, but any type of research when it comes to saving a life. And we can't just depend upon what's always been done. And so, you know, I think that this will, right. you know, begin a new thought process for many researchers. There are, you know, we're hoping that this will work for any cancer, as long as the cancer cell itself can be tagged and identified uniquely. And, you know, what we're looking at is a protein
right.
that each cancer cell has. It's unique to that cell, but not to healthy cells. And so, but this might be able to be transferred into other types of treatment, possibly for malaria and Ebola and AIDS oh, yeah. and things like that. You know, we've yeah, got – there's so many things right, in exactly. the cancer
That's
field
amazing.
That, you know, I look at as, you know, disparities. And one is, you know, what causes cancer? You know, there needs to be so much more research done on that. You know, it's, we've right. got to nip it in the bud from the beginning and quit putting the Band-Aid on it.
Yeah, the point's not to have it, right? yeah. Oh, my God, that was one of my parents' – that's a saying that I've known from my childhood.
Yeah, yeah.
Like putting Band-Aids on cancer. You know, like you, when you're doing something halfway or you're doing the shortcut and they're like, you're not
exactly.
fixing the problem. It's
yeah,
like putting Band-Aids
absolutely.
On cancer. So funny that you said that.
And we need
I've
to understand
that saying,
you know,
my whole
how
life.
To prevent cancer. So, you know, I think the first step is to prevent it. But then,
right.
you know, ultimately, how do you, you know, early detect it? And all the things that, you know, there's so many things that
right.
this treatment is going to help and save. But there's, you know, way more things that can be researched. So, you know, I see that this is going to open the door for a lot of thought processes that people will look at it and say, wow, well, first of all, John Kansas didn't even have a college degree. So, you know, it doesn't mean you had to have a PhD to come up with, you know, something innovative.
No, how many things, yeah. How many times do we hear that,
yeah.
right? The guys that dropped out or didn't get the chance to go
what
to college
are
the ones that create all this amazing
so many
stuff.
and then, you know, right. just the idea right. that the impossible can happen, but you got to believe that it will. And so that's where, you know, we again just, right. you know, give so many accolades to the communities for embracing this work and bring it to fruition.
Yeah.
It is.
It's amazing stuff. It really is. How can, you know, I know that the foundation itself is not operating in that mode anymore. However, the site is still up. Could you give us a little information on
sure,
how people can
sure.
contribute, the
well,
website
when the foundation
address
closed, we closed on
visit.
June 30th. What we did was we maintained our URL, and it's kansas.org, but it's not spelled like the state. It's like Kansas, so K-A-N-Z-I-U-S www.thebrainfarm.org. And when you go to our website, we took all the information off of that because, you know, there's nobody to answer any more questions and there's no one to refresh, you know, updated information. But what they can do is we set up three human trial funds, ones that once people begin to benefit from the treatment process that possibly will need help. The institution that will be conducting the research may need assistance to help these individuals. We set up three human trial funds, one at Baylor College of Medicine where the lead researchers are at right now, and then two funds at area treatment centers where John Kansas had been treated, one in Erie, Pennsylvania, and one in Fort Myers at the Lee Memorial Health System. And so those three funds will ultimately assist cancer patients and the institutions in providing the human trials. And people can give there's a link to donate online or an address that you can send a check via SNAMO.
Great, that's awesome. All right. Well, yeah, definitely if you're listening to this and you are interested in the future of these trials, please take a moment to check out the website and if you feel so moved to do so, contribute. Absolutely. I mean, because we're not done with this, obviously. Now that leaves us you. What's happening with you? I mean, because now you've worked yourself out of a job. Now I realize, and I have to share this, I made the move to Florida a year ago, and Mark came down to visit. We actually were here working, like you always were. I would get a text message, oh, by the way, I'm in Florida for a day. So we met up and went out to Clearwater, Florida, and had a conversation about life. And I could tell then that this was an area that you really wanted to be. Florida was the sunshine. You were ready for some sunshine. You were ready to get away from the cold, just like I was. So why don't you tell us what's next for you? What's going on with you and where you see yourself? And
I'll tell you, it's
what your future looks like.
I love life's journey. I really, truly, to be honest, have no idea what the future holds for me, but I do know that at this point in time, I'm looking out my window at a clear sky that has sunshine and palm trees below me, and I'm in Orlando, Florida, right now, and I found a unit that was furnished that they would rent to us for a short term. And it kind of gave me a reprieve to rejuvenate myself, do my job search from here, and, you know, really focus on, you know, what can I do next to really continue my personal desire to make a difference in people's lives. I just want to do good. I love being philanthropic, and although I don't have the resources to do it, I can use my skill sets and my passion of life to make a difference in people's lives. And that's really what my desire is. So I'm trying to find that next niche that I can embrace and be a part of. You know, I'm looking at different job opportunities, and I may take on, you know, the CEO, executive director position of another nonprofit somewhere in the country. I am doing some consulting with several nonprofits right now, helping their executive leadership in understanding methodology of fundraising and understanding donors. I'm also consulting a for-profit company that wants to set up a foundation. And I've had experience setting up three different kinds of businesses, and two have been nonprofit offices. So, you know, I've got the experience in that. And here I'm thinking, you know, wow, life's journey has given me lots of opportunity, and now I can like put it all together. And then lastly, I'm gonna maybe hit the public speaking circuit as I am developing a couple little speeches to give to audiences. Right now I'm looking at the nonprofit arena, but you know, I can develop it into other things, whether it's for personal enrichment or professional you know, advice. But you know, one topic is how to work yourself out of a job. And you know, I have been thinking about that because, you know, people are pretty much in shock factor when I tell them that, you know, I don't have a job anymore because I work myself out of it. And they're like, well, why? And I'm like, well, you know, that's what we're in the business to do. You know, we have a mission, and ultimately we should accomplish it. And if you can't accomplish it, you should maybe not have that mission. So
that's right.
You know, really help executive leaders and boards exactly. understand how to, you know, set up their organizations. And you know what? A mission statement does not have to be etched in stone. You can, you know, it can be a fluid statement that changes as you, you know, evolve in what you're trying to accomplish through your organization. And then the other one, I need to be a little bit more lighthearted because I actually am a fun, loving person, is Confessions of a Fundraiser. I'll tell you, you know, I'm avid on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and it's like it's funny because, you know, people will say, I can't believe what you posted yesterday. And I'm like, it's true. People think, you know, I make up some of my stories because, you know, it's like just too hard to believe. Some things are very serendipitous. I mean, you know, how do two people end up at the same place at the same time? Right. It's happensake, but it happens. And, you know, I mean, I've met some of the craziest, right. some of the weirdest, some of the dumbest people in the world. And I've seen it all. And I think so often fundraisers in their work look at this and their job and they say, I'm on an island by myself. No one understands it. But when you start to share these stories, you can really become empathetic with your audience and they understand, you understand them because we're all going through very like situations. So, you know, the sky's the limit to what I can do and I'm excited about what the opportunities are.
That's the truth. Well, I'm excited to see what happens. Somebody's going to get something great out of this. I may be coming after you for my club, you know, Living Healthy Living Smart Club, which launches hopefully in the next couple months. But I mean, yeah, it's knowledge is the most valuable thing that you acquire over time in your lifetime. And I think that we don't make enough use of it often, not personally like you and I, but I think that in general, we don't utilize that IP, that intellectual property that people who've lived some years, a few years, have, because it's earned. And so it's great when, you know, I know that you feel this way. We've talked about this. I feel extremely fortunate to have the reach that I do where I can share, you know, not tell people how to do something and not convince them of anything, but share just the experience and then realize that how many people have the similar things.
Oh, yeah.
Going on, and like, they're like, you ask them to raise a hand, and the whole room's hand goes up.
Every step in my journey as picking up pebbles, nuggets of that are really beautiful in and of themselves.
Yeah.
But when you take each of them and put them together, you can create a masterpiece that is just a mosaic of intellect and passion and just so many great things that, you know, never would you imagine they all fit together, but boy, you can put that puzzle together.
Yeah, you can. You certainly can. Well, you know what? It's been great talking to you, Mark. I mean, this is amazing stuff, and it's great to hear what's happening with you, because I've known you, 5 years now, I think. And most of the time I've seen you at functions or we've talked on the phone, but you always were working. It's like you were constantly working because you, man on a mission, was definitely you. And so it paid off, and it's going to pay off for a lot of people. And when you think about what that really means,
you know, Chris,
that means
just
that a
the
lot
day
of lives
that first
are
going to
be saved in the future.
Life has been changed.
With this technology.
Every tier will be worthwhile.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like I said, we all know someone. There's not, so serendipitous, as you would say, that we're having this podcast today, because I just got off the phone with someone whose father-in-law was just diagnosed with prostate cancer. And we were talking yesterday. I had this person who was working for me in the past. She just got through going through chemo and a mastectomy. Courageous lady. And I mean, I know this person, and I know she's a fun-loving person, a mom, and life was just going along just great. She didn't feel sick. She was, you know, she went in for an exam and they found something and it ended up being this. What a life-changing thing. So the idea to me that we can go in and we can kill a cell without doing any kind of side effects or damage to the organ itself is just, it's just mind-blowing. So I really appreciate you being on today, and everybody check out the the website, again, it was kanzius.org. And check out what's going on with the human trials there. Donate if you feel, again, moved to do so. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in and downloading this podcast. And it's the first of many special podcasts we're going to be doing with Living Healthy, Living Smart on all kinds of topics that impact the way that we live. So everyone have a beautiful rest of your day and live with passion.